First of all, very interesting day so far. Great discussions. The panel discussion, Jackie, very, very interesting. I wrote a lot of notes on the back of a napkin, I see, or the front, I'm not sure. It's interesting, we're talking about data and digital, and I'm the VP of data and digital. I'm still using pen and paper every now and then, but very interesting so far. Chris, very interesting, interesting discussion. I work for Waldom, a master distributor of electronic components. And we never deal with the end user or the engineer, et cetera. So all new to me, very interesting stuff. You know, before I talk about content, before I take you into our data and digital journey at Waldom, I want you to imagine this scenario. Imagine you walk into a meeting room, okay? You have your team sitting there, and they ask you to look at the following two images, okay? And if you cannot see it in the back, the Orb Beaver team, you can stand up, you can come a little bit closer because I need your help. These two images, they are different, okay? I'm not sure where the differences are, but I need your help. And we're in a business meeting. We have limited time. So we have 60 seconds. The time is ticking. Can you help me find all the differences between these two images? All right? How many? How many? Three? All right. Three, five, how many? Six, seven, how many images? How many differences? I know this is important. I mean, one of the two images is correct. I'm not sure which one, and I need your help. I need your help. Which one is correct? Or are they both correct, and they're just showing slightly different things? What's going on here? I don't know, a couple more seconds. I'll let you think about it. It's very important. Very important. Let's have a look. All right, time is almost up. So who got four or more? Four or more? All right, almost everyone. Five or more? Five or more? Mike, you got five? Yeah? All right. Six or more? That would be strange. I think there are only five issues, but five images. So five, very good. Very good. I see Chris looking at me. I mean, I invited this guy to speak in front of an audience, and now he's showing these two images. I mean, he's already regretting it, but you know, why am I showing this? This is a complete waste of time, right? I just wasted 60 seconds of your life. Well, this is what we do to our business users every single day with data not being accurate and the quality not being up to date. We ask them to look at two different BI reports, at least that's what happened in our company, and we had slight differences between the report, and they were looking at it, and they were pulling me into a meeting and asking me, hey, sales year to date shows this number here and this number here, which one is accurate? I'm like, yeah, actually they're both accurate. They're just measuring slightly different things. And that was not the answer they liked, of course. They just want to have one source of truth. So today I would like to talk about the following. How do I improve the quality of my analytics? And that's a big question to answer, and I'm probably not gonna answer that in the next 40 minutes or so, but at least I wanna try to give it a start, okay? Before I do that, let me introduce myself. I'm Jelger. I'm the global VP of data and digital for Waldom, again, a master distributor of electronic components. And I report directly into the CEO. So we had an interesting discussion about where should data and digital fit in, and should it be IT, should it be marketing, sales, should it be a combined effort, whatever. For us, it's a separate department, data and digital, and we're driving the change from a data and digital perspective. And what's interesting is that as of February 1st, the European operations team is going to report into me as well. So, because we've identified many issues with the operational side, very manual still, and we think digitalization can really help us in becoming more efficient. So operations is going to report into the data and digital side. Pretty cool. As you can see, love to learn. Got my executive MBA last year from IESA, Spanish business school, not sure if you're familiar, one of the better business schools in Europe. Did a very cool Harvard Business Analytics program in 2019 at Harvard Business School. It's a hybrid program, 9 months total, two immersions on the Harvard Business School campus, which was very cool. And before that, I did my supply chain management master in 2014 in Amsterdam. All right, look at this guy. 2009, became president of the US. 2017, his job was done, I guess. At least he didn't get reelected. He aged pretty badly. Look at this guy. 2014, that's when I started at Waltham. 2024, that's today. And the reason I'm showing this picture is because I actually had to renew my passport for the travel here. And I compared my two passport pictures, and I'm like, wow, what happened? Showed it to my girlfriend. My girlfriend and I are dating now for about 3 years. She's never seen me with hair. So she's like, Waltham has not been good to you. Waltham has not been good to you. I'm not sure if it's Waltham or if it's just me and I'm aging very poorly. But what's interesting is I started as an intern at Waltham. And all those schools that you saw just now, the Harvard Business Analytics program, the executive MBA, Waltham actually sponsored that. So that was very interesting for me. And that trajectory from being an intern to a VP, that's kind of what we've been talking about, you know, giving young people the opportunity in this industry to make a difference. And that, I think, is very cool. All right, one more slide on me, and then we'll talk about actual stuff, okay? So this was last year. So 2023, climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. Not as impressive as Ed, I guess. This is 19,000 feet. Still quite high. Did it without oxygen. You don't need oxygen on the Mount Kilimanjaro, but still. MBA, as I mentioned. And on the right-hand side, you see completed the first full marathon of my life. That's 26 miles, I think, 42 kilometers within 4 hours. You see my girlfriend there. And if you look really well, that's my cat supporting me too. Yeah. So, well, enough about me. Back to the big question. How do I improve the quality of my data? Big question. And to me, one of the answers is create a single source of truth for your data. Okay. So this is going to be the agenda for today. So I want to talk about Waltham's data landscape, what kind of data is important to Waltham. Talk about the golden data model, a model that we've created to power all the reporting and analytics in our company. And lastly, I guess you cannot do without it nowadays, talk a little bit about the impact of generative AI, more from really applied use cases, okay? So the data landscape. So again, this is kind of how I view our landscape. So we have the component manufacturer. They typically sell directly through the OEM, to the OEM, the contract manufacturer, or the end user. Sometimes there's a distributor in between, of course. And where's Waltham? Waltham is really in between those two. And that's our special spot. And as you can see, I mean, one of our key models is excess inventory, manage the slow moving and excess inventory of distributors and of factories. We have about $500 million of inventory on the shelf, about 200K part numbers, so quite a breadth of inventory, and really focused on that excess management. We call it green stock, as we're trying to keep that stock out of the landfill and trying to find a second home for it, because the excess of one distributor may not be excess for another distributor. That's how we tried to find a second home. And as you could see on the video as well, integration here is really important. So we integrate our inventory and pricing into the ERP systems, into the e-commerce websites of those distributors. Now, let's talk about the data. So I break out our data in a couple of different ways. So we have our internal data. You have your transactional data. As any distributor, we buy products, we stock products, and we sell products. That's kind of what we do at our core. Then we have our operational data. So we need operations to make all of this happen. So here you quote your customer, you place your purchase order, all these type of things, okay? That's your operational data. Then you have your organizational data. And this is something that we haven't talked about a whole lot, but I think it's very interesting, and that's, I think, where generative AI may come into play. So this is the organizational know-how. So these are the emails that you send out. These are the knowledge bases, your intranet, your Teams messages, the notes in your notebook that you're all noting down right here. That's all organizational knowledge. And then you have industry-specific details. So for us, what's important, the inventory levels of distributors, pricing of distributors, lead times from the factory, that's all industry data. And then you have your public data that's accessible to everyone. And here, of course, everyone is using ChatGPT nowadays and all of that to access that public data in a good way. So that's the data landscape. So it's a wealth of data. How do you manage all of that? And here the big question is, okay, is the BI tool, is that to the rescue, you know? I mean, these are the three most common BI tools used Is any organization here not using any of these three? That's Power BI, Tableau, or Google Looker. Are there other systems being used? No, I guess. Yeah? Okay. Click. Yeah, exactly. There are a couple more, but this probably covers 95% of the use cases, really big guys. And it worked great for us as well. I mean, we use Power BI since 2015 when it was just released. It was still free, which was fantastic. We didn't have to pay anything. But Tableau was the big guy. Tableau was the big guy back then. Power BI just released their free version. We started using it because even a guy like me without any engineering or data science background, I have a supply chain management background, you know, what do I know? Even I could use these Power BI data models and change our company, which was fantastic. And it got us to where we are today. And I published my first Power BI report, was able to build a team around me, and they asked me, can you publish two more? I said, sure, no problem. I'll publish two more Power BI reports. And then we published three more, and four more, and 10 more, and 30 more. And at one point, we had more than 100 different Power BI reports to power our reporting and analytics. And you know, in itself, that's not really a big issue for an organization unless the data is not consistent and accurate across all those reports. And why is that not the case? Because every single Power BI report had its own data model with its own business logic and its own transformations and all of that stuff. So this kind of led to my initial picture where it seems like it's the same, but it's slightly different. Both are accurate, but we're not sure why. And that's very, very challenging. So what did we do? We created a golden data model. So we created this enterprise golden data model that has all the logic in it. And we created that, and on that, we build all the reports and all the analytics. So we now have this one source of truth that powers all the other analytics. And this really helped us to provide more consistency in our reporting and analytics. And the time spent on reporting and analytics is down by 5 times. So if we want to publish a new report right now, because there's a very specific use case that we're looking at, we can get it out in no time, and it's consistent. And we have great documentation on that golden data set. So even if there's a small difference in one of the two reports, we know it because we can go into the documentation and we know exactly why that difference is there. So it was fantastic. Now the consideration is it's a significant upfront investment. We actually stopped all the development of all the new reports, of all the analytics for about 4 months until we had this figured out. But again, I think it's worth it. And your question is, hey, how much do you want to centralize versus decentralize? You have these big concepts now in the data world of data mesh, where you're decentralizing everything and your domain specific knowledge, they become the owner of their data and they publish their data as a product, etc. This is more of a centralization. I think for our business it works pretty well. So that's kind of what we did here. And it worked out really, really well for us. Maybe a little bit too technical, so I'll not go into too much detail here, but this is what we're going to. This is what we're currently building in Microsoft Fabric. So we're creating this data architecture, this Mendelian architecture, where we're ingesting all of that raw data in its form in our bronze layer, cleaning it up all the way into the gold layer so that we can do our analytics on this. So if you have any questions on this, we can discuss it. We'd love to. And if you have anyone in your organization that's working on similar initiatives, definitely let them reach out to me and happy to discuss more. So let's talk about the impact of generative AI. Now, this is a buzzword, and I agree that large learning models will not solve your sourcing problems and these type of things, but you can do some cool things, and you know, the standard things are now, even I can create a very cool LinkedIn update, you know, so as you can see here, that's me with my CEO, Don Acri, that some of you know, in a green screen studio to record our avatars, and there's a very fancy update from me on LinkedIn. Now, this was about a half a year ago. Since then, I see the same updates from everyone, and I know exactly who's using AI and who's not to do their updates, so I'm kind of going back to writing it myself again in my broken English. I think people like that more, but that's okay. These two images, they were actually created with AI Now, what is the use case for that? I'm not sure, but it was still fun project. These are, by the way, the five differences, I think. Is that right? Did you find anything extra? Mike? No? That's it? All right, very good. So you can create your images with AI, of course. Not sure how relevant in our industry to create all these type of images, maybe some marketing, I don't know. And then you have we have this one, pretty cool.
Hey, Orb Weaver crowd. This is me, Jelger's way more handsome digital twin. Pretty cool, right? I can speak any language, and I can even take over the voice of my CEO, Don Akery.
This is much better. How do you like my Texas accent now? Pretty scary that they can let me say anything now. The technology is not perfect yet, but it will be soon.
Yeah, so these are the avatars that you can create. You can type in text and you can let the avatar say anything that you want them to say. So it's pretty funny, and I put Dawn in the picture that I created. So you can do some fancy stuff with it. But I think this is all fun, you know, but how does it relate in? How does it turn into revenue for our companies? I'm not entirely sure, but I'm a kind of a geek, so I love to play around with it. Where I think generative AI is going to play a big role in those large language models is in your organizational know-how. Okay, so these are the emails that you send out every day. These are your meetings that you have. These are the notes that you make in OneNote or wherever you're making them. These are your Teams messages. This is your company's intranet, your knowledge articles, all of that stuff, you know. And we talked about, as we want to automate operations, so we need more knowledge workers, and the knowledge is becoming more important for our companies. Now, how do you manage all of that stuff? I have a little video here of a promise of Microsoft. By the way, who remembers this guy? Yeah? I showed it to my team. They're all in their 20s, and they're like, not sure. Not sure what this is, but I guess I have the right crowd now. Yeah, so that's good. So Clippy going into Copilot. So Copilot is on the right. So Clippy was completely useless, of course. No one used it, and it didn't work. New promise for Microsoft Copilot. Copilot is that Copilot for your daily work. So you can ask questions. And it's kind of like your ChatGPT for your organizational knowledge. I tried it out myself. I woke up around, what was it, 4 this morning. I come from Amsterdam, so it was a little bit jet lagged. So I woke up at 4, saw this YouTube video, how you can create your own Copilot, and I did. And here I've integrated it into Microsoft Teams that many of you may be using. And I truly believe that this is going to be the new way how people are going to interact with their organizational data. So they don't have to go to their intranet anymore and search for articles or ask your HR manager. What I did is I linked this to our policies from the HR team in Europe. So I'm now interacting with this chatbot. So for the ones that cannot read it, I'm not feeling well today. How do I call in sick? Doesn't happen too often, but I just want to try it out. How does that actually work? How do I call in sick? Now Microsoft Copilot, it's searching for your knowledge, for your organizational knowledge, and it replies back with the policy. Inform your manager, submit a ticket, communicate to your team. All right, so I respond back. Actually, maybe I'm not sick. Maybe I just need a vacation, okay? How many vacation days do I get? And then Copilot is thinking, it's searching through your knowledge base, and it's responding back with our vacation policy. So we have a very complicated vacation policy. If you're part-time, you have different vacation, and if you have a indefinite contract versus not indefinite, so I'm an indefinite employee, and I'm full-time. All right, so you're entitled to 240 hours of vacation days. All right, very good. 240 hours, how many days is that? Okay, I'm not sure. I work 8 hours a day. They respond, 240 hours of paid leave is equivalent to 12 days. I mean, that means that I'm working 20 hours a day. It doesn't really work. So that means I'm working 20 hours per day. I don't work in Bangladesh, I live in the Netherlands, and work 8 hours per day, okay? So you feed the model again, okay? According to the policy, you have 240 hours. So they respond again, you have 240 hours, doesn't work too well. And I asked them the question, okay, perfect, all good. So now tell me again, how many days do I have of vacation? And they reply back, equivalent to 30 days. Well, great. So now I know I have 30 days of vacation. Yes, that's a lot, but I live in the Netherlands. We like to take vacations. And this is how it worked. And I had one final question. That makes sense. Thanks. I will consider going to Hawaii. Any recommendations for when to travel to Hawaii? I like sunshine and great waves. I'm sorry, I'm not sure how to help you with that. All right. So in theory, this is a really good concept. And I think over the next couple of months, this is going to work out really well, where you have your organizational ChatGPT that's trained on your data with the large language models. And your team can interact with your co-pilot and get that organizational knowledge. And I think this is going to get the productivity up much higher. I had a conversation with our HR manager on Monday. And she's like, my team is driving me crazy. Or not her team, but the European team, because they're asking her all these questions about policies and stuff, you know. We have it on Confluence. We have it on the knowledge base. People just don't know how to find it. They're too lazy to find it. They prefer to send a message. So now instead of sending a message to your HR manager, send a message to your co-pilot, right? We don't get our HR manager distracted. You still get your answer after a couple tries. Yeah. But I think this is going to get better and better and better. And I personally think that this is the future of how we interact with our organizational data. And this was just built in 10 minutes or so. So can you imagine if you spend a little bit more time on it to train the model, etc. So to me, it's more like feeding the beast, okay? These models, although you may be able to create some better models yourself, I think many of us, many organizations ourselves, are not able to create those models, okay? I think the big question is, how do we leverage those models to the best extent? And to me, that's what I call feed the beast, okay? I'm not gonna create a beast. The beast is being created by all those big guys out there. I just need to feed it really well, and I need to keep it happy, okay? So here are a couple one-liners. So the model is only good as the data you input. So how do you make sure that you make the relevant organizational data available to the right people? So here you have a lot of security, of course. How do you make sure that your documents are being distributed to the right people so that your Gen AI can read the right documents? How do you make sure that that relevant organizational data is up to date so that you don't have conflicting data that you're inputting in your model? How do you make sure that it's actually just available, right? Everything you're writing down in your pen and paper notebook here is not available to the model. How do you make sure that everything is going to be available? These are some of the big questions that I'm trying to answer for our organization so that we can, as these models are getting better and better, we can get the most out of it right away. And I think we can all do that in our companies. The second is the output is as good as your instructions. And this is going back to the fact that we need to train our people to input the right prompts. I mean, I played around with it, and after 3 or 4 prompts, I got the right answer. But if you're not used to this stuff, you maybe ask a question, you get a wrong answer, and you stop. You quit. So we need to train our people to work with these type of tools to become more efficient. And this is kind of going back to some of the discussions on the panel, where, you know, we have our blockers, typically the tenured employees that don't know how to work with new technology, etc. And then while I was listening to the conversations, I was thinking about our purchasing manager, which is great. She's a great person, but she doesn't know technology. She doesn't know what an API is. And it doesn't make her a bad person, but it makes it difficult for her to come up with new ideas to innovate our company. And my question there is, I thought, okay, what is better? A very loyal person that will not leave your company and that's very concerned about the company, that wants to do the best for the company, that we just need to train and that we need to educate? Or is it a new person that knows how to use these tools, but that's going to be gone in a year or two because another opportunity comes by? So I'm not sure. I'm a little bit conflicted there. I think that the loyal people that we have in our teams are great, but we as companies, we should do a lot more to retrain them. I mean, we should send them on 5-day boot camps. We should tell them, stop everything you're doing, drop everything. We're going to send you to I don't know where, Amsterdam maybe. And just sit in an office for 5 days, and we're going to train you on this. Because these people that have been with the business for 20, 30 years, what they love to do the most is just dive into their day-to-day. And that's what they're best at, their day-to-day stuff. But we need to get them out of their comfort zones. I think we as companies, we should do more of that. I think that was it.